Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus. And every week, we take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who are they? What made them so notorious? How did the internet or the algorithm choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? Listen to 16th Minute of Fame on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Worst Year Ever, a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
Fuck the Olympics!
Fuck the Olympics!
Fuck the Olympics.
Big
Welcome
time.
To Worst Year Ever, a show where we fuck say the fuck Olympics. The Olympics, but we don't fuck the Olympics, because step one of anti-Olympic solidarity, and this is a hard one, do not have sex with the Olympics.
Well, especially not on those cardboard beds, which has been debunked.
Yeah.
You can fuck on the
debunked.
Beds if you wanted
they,
to.
Are not.
You can fuck wherever
I understand it. They're not handing out the condoms anymore, though.
No, they
so the
aren't.
Olympics is supposed to be less of an unhinged fuck fest.
I mentioned this on
even
More News, but I actually have a friend whose boyfriend is at the Olympics for baseball.
Oh boy!
And she
for
sent
baseball
me a picture.
They do that.
Okay. Yeah, apparently. I guess he's playing for Team Israel. And they're not good.
That does not surprise me. Yeah.
Not surprising. He's like, well, okay, whatever. But the cardboard bed, she sent a picture of it. It is a cardboard bed. They give them exactly one pillow and one thin blanket for these nice. Olympians.
You got to stay alert. You got to be fresh.
It's a bad idea. The Olympics has always been a bad idea, I think. I think it was good back, and I'm going to share my favorite piece of Olympics-related trivia. You know the weird penises on all those statues? Those old Greek statues?
Yes.
Define they, weird.
Like, okay.
This is right where Robert goes. When we're
how the tips, the tips of
point.
The, if you look at like David or any of those other, the, number one, a lot of people will comment that like the penises kind of look a little small given the size of the people, but also the heads of the penises are kind of like curled up in a weird way. And that's not because their dicks look different. That's because they had a different attitude towards nudity, particularly among athletes. And when you're an athlete, you didn't perform nude, you performed with a little thing wrapped around the head of your penis, because what made you naked as a man wasn't that your dick and balls were exposed, it was that the glands were exposed. So you had to tie up the little head of your penis. They had these little things, you would wrap it around your waist, and it was a whole thing. And so the Olympics, all of those guys competing, they weren't naked, they had a little thing tied up around the head of their dick, which is why their dicks all corkscrew in a kind of a weird way in those statues.
Thought you were making a joke, but I believe you now.
That's absolutely true.
It's
the best. Anyone who tells you the Greeks and the Romans just didn't care about nudity, that's not true, but the only thing they cared about was whether or not the head
Glandular.
Of your dick was exposed.
Glandular
yeah, if the head's covered up, you're not naked. Then it's fine to grope another naked man covered in oil.
On that note, I think it's time for us to introduce our guest for the day. And that would be Molly Lambert from the No Olympics LA organization. She's here to talk about why the Olympics are terrible. Hi, Molly.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Fuck the Olympics.
Fuck the Olympics.
Yeah. we're very grateful to have you join us today because there is a lot to unpack here. This is something
unpack
that I think
like
is...
an Olympian untying that weird little string.
All right. First of all, I gotta get in on that argument. So the thing is, the modern Olympics, the Olympics that we are against, that we are talking about, are a thing that was invented basically around the start of like industrialism. Around the time when industrialism solved, you know, all the human needs, and then it was like, what else should we do with this just, you know, boon of resources that will never run out ever? But the modern Olympics have nothing to do with the ancient Greek Olympics, which are, you know, sort of apocryphal competition between city states where they would allegedly, like, you know, lay down their arms and go compete with each other. Total bullshit narrative. And the reason they invoke that is because the Olympics are invented by a eugenicist.
Like so many things we love today.
You love to hear it.
The main guy who invented the Olympics, who brought the modern Olympics into being, his name is Pierre de Coubertin. He was a French guy.
He was the founder
of the Olympics, and you can find all kinds of super racist quotes from him about Africans and just generally fucked up old weird eugenicist stuff. So
interesting. Yeah. The racist Olympics are rooted in racism.
Yeah, would you believe?
One of the my favorite stories about that is that, like, everyone makes a big deal today about, like, the 1936 Olympics, which is the Nazi Olympics, right? And how, like, I think it was Jesse Owens, like, showed everybody that, like won a bunch of gold, as a black man, won a bunch of gold medals, and how this was, like, so embarrassing for Hitler. And it actually wasn't, because Hitler and Owens's coach were all really racist and were like, well, of course he's really good at running. Like, he was living in the jungle not that long ago. Like, that's what his coach said before the game. Like, it was in no way did it convince any Nazis that, like, they were wrong about their racial ideas. It reinforced them.
One thing you see throughout the Olympics, and something I think people are really noticing this year, is the way in which black athletes are tokenized and sort of painted as being these perfect physical machines in a very racist way. And, you know, we saw today Simone Biles had sort of a breakdown and is leaving. And I think we're just having a different conversation about athletes and mental health and the way in which athletic victory, you know, can also, like, damage somebody. Simone Biles especially is somebody who, you know, is one of the greatest athletes in the world. She was abused by Team USA, by Larry Nassar, for many years. And the fact that we would expect her to go back and compete for Team USA, to compete for her abuser in order to redeem her abuser in the public eye, is fucking insane.
It's twisted.
Yeah.
It's twisted. So, you know, one thing we always say is it's like the Olympics really present themselves as like a thing where it's like, this is the only place you get to see female athletes. This is the only place you get to see, you know, sports you wouldn't normally get to watch on television. That's completely a construct. There's no reason we can't have gymnastics in prime time if we wanted to.
Yeah, that's the networks. That's, you know, corporate decision makers deciding what is broadcast.
Right, and it's very sexist and racist. Usually what we end up broadcasting, you know, is like just football and baseball and basketball. So again, we could have women's sports. Just making it so that the Olympics are the only time we get to see women's sports is part of the insidiousness of the Olympics. It's also a totally bad idea for these athletes to only compete every 4 years.
Yeah.
Because especially with some of the like younger athletes, it's like that is a lifetime in gymnastics. You know, they might get to compete once or twice and then that's it.
Then the lifetime is over.
Yeah. Right. And if you didn't win a gold medal, like, what are you supposed to do with the rest of your life? Also, there's no plan for these people. The Olympics doesn't care.
Yeah. Very few people come through this with financial opportunities,
right,
or security for the future.
And I think we saw that the idea that these are the greatest athletes in the world and, you know, we have to let them compete. And if we didn't have the Olympics, it would be such a tragedy for them. It's like, well, we saw that they disqualified Sha'Carri Richardson for smoking pot,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so they're disqualifying people who might win for arbitrary racist reasons. And I think people are just catching on that the Olympics at their core are like a racist, exploitative project. They were an offshoot of the World's Fair. They were like a side circus to the World's Fair. And they're very much like the World's Fair. They're like a traveling carnival that comes into a city to extract all the money and displace people and bring in more police. And then leave when it's time to be accountable.
Yeah. I want to talk about all of that. I want to talk about the effect of the Olympics on host cities, policing, on low-income communities, the unhoused, all of that. But just to start, I want to hear a little bit about No Olympics and how you got involved with them. Just
sure.
To set us up here.
Yeah, No Olympics LA was founded when LA was up for the bid. That was entirely, nobody in LA wanted the bid.
No.
It's always just like, you know, oligarchs, rich guys who
want
to
profit. Can you imagine,
profit.
Just as we've all lived in this, in the city, can you imagine anything worse than the Olympics hitting Los Angeles?
I would like to leave here before that happens.
Yeah, right.
Just a nightmare.
Well, and one
you
of
can't
our
get
big,
anywhere when it's the marathon for 4 hours.
One of our big talking points is that the 1984 Olympics, which LA likes to spin as this exceptionalist, like, we made money, nobody, you know, we pulled it off, we used all these existing structures, totally screwed over poor people, black and brown people, led to a big increase in militarization of police in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. that we at No Olympics believe directly is a straight line to the 1992 uprisings in mm-hmm. Los Angeles, mm-hmm. because 84 was when they started being like, let's just take the toys out whenever we want. Yep. Let's take the tanks out. They didn't have tanks before the Olympics.
Let's put men in rifles on helicopters and let them fly around American cities, because that seems necessary.
And the 1932 Olympics were happening at the height of the Great Depression in Los Angeles. It was when there were Hoovervilles, like the big mm-hmm. encampments like we have right now. And people said the same thing. They said, like, how are we spending money on this big tourist thing when people are dying on the street? You know, it just makes no sense. The 2028 bid started No Olympics LA because we specifically set out to defeat the 2028 bid. It went through with no vote from anyone in the public, but it was brought by Eric Garcetti, Mayor Eric Garcetti, fail son of Gil Garcetti, another former LA mayor, and Casey Wasserman, who is another fail son, grandson, I believe, of Lou Wasserman, the super agent who started one of the big agencies. Casey Wasserman, we like to point out, he's a sports super agent. He's like Jerry Maguire. He manages Megan Rapinoe, blah, blah, blah. He was on the Lolita Express.
Was he now?
Classic.
With Jeff Epstein and Kevin Spacey.
K-Space.
Oh, God.
And Chris Tucker.
Chris Tucker.
C-Tux?
Tucker was also
rode on the Lolita Express at least once.
Very
just
cool.
With Casey.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we also think it's insane that, like, somebody who was on the Lolita Express would be managing Megan Rapinoe and trying to push her as, like, this, like, feminist sports hero. And then getting her a deal with Victoria's Secret, who are also a huge part of the Epstein thing with Les Wexner. You know, like, the whole thing is so
sick,
tied up with capital and advertising and all this stuff. So
absolutely.
My personal introduction into No Olympics is that my grandmother was supposed to be in the 1936 Olympics. She is no longer with us. She passed away 4 years ago, but she lived to be super old. Super cool.
She sounds incredible.
She was a high jumper and a German Jew. So she was essentially going to compete for Germany in the 1936 Olympics, which the 36 Olympics were sort of decided on before Hitler came into power. Mm. And then by 1936, Hitler was in power. He didn't want to do the Olympics at first because he thought they were for Freemasons and Jews. That's his quote.
Oh, Hitler.
But he was convinced by Goebbels that it would be this incredible opportunity for propaganda.
Yeah.
Which it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And basically, they kept my grandmother on the team as long as they needed to, because they weren't sure if the world would boycott if they started actively, you know, doing the extermination stuff that they were going to do. Just started act, you know, saying, yeah, we are really going to kill all the Jews. So my grandmother was, you know, a great athlete. And then at the last second, she got a letter essentially from Hitler saying, you're not on the team anymore because you're not
signed
a good
Adolf
athlete.
Hitler.
Yeah. It's signed Heil Hitler.
Yeah.
No.
That's,
of course it is.
So that's an original Hitler right there.
Yeah. And she was really, you know, she was worried because she wanted to compete and win, obviously, because she thought, you know, I'll show everybody that, like, what a Jew can do. But she also was afraid of won, what would happen to her, and that she would be expected to Heil Hitler on the podium, and that, you know, she wouldn't be able to do that. So she ended up escaping to England because of this. But, you know, I think just the whole thing, and also the Nazis invented the torch relay. We love to bring that up. And they invented it as a show of white supremacy, that it was the torches being lit in Greece. And then the Western tradition is coming from Greece to Germany, where now the flame of Aryan supremacy will burn forever. Obviously, we all know what torches mean. But, the main symbol of the Olympics is this white supremacist ritual. So I think I just always had a skepticism about all of those things because of this personal experience about propaganda, nationalism, big spectacle, national, international togetherness, all of this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes
sense. It's amazing to me. Because this is both with LA and kind of how the decision was made without any voters having input. Like you've seen the same thing with Japan. I just read an article before we did this from the Daily Beast with the title "Fuck the Olympics." That was published back in May. And one of the things it points out is that about 83% of the country didn't want to do the Olympics.
Yep.
Heading into this, like it just did not matter. Like the fact that virtually everyone in Japan. Like they had like former mob bosses coming out and being like, this seems anti-human to do the Olympics right now.
What is the vaccination rate in Japan is
like
something
3%
like
back then. They really botched the rollout. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think this is what we're seeing with Tokyo 2020 is the real mask off moment for the International Olympic Committee. That all the things they advertise the games as being about, you know, togetherness, like bringing people together, like laying down differences and celebrating the human spirit. It's like they are going to get people killed.
It's not about that. It's about money.
It's about money. And everybody can see that now, I think. It's just about money. And that's why they won't cancel it, is because the only people who have the power to cancel it are the International Olympic Committee. And basically the government of Japan was like begging them to cancel it.
Yeah.
And they were like, no.
Which is
that's wild
that the host country doesn't get to have some say in this. And I think it's worth pointing out that the IOC is comprised primarily of incredibly wealthy people, oligarchs, some royalty, literally royalty.
Who have power and importance only because they get to decide where the Olympics is. So if we were to go forward with the Olympics and what I think every reasonable person would agree is the rational way, which is like, well, let's just have them be in Greece every time they do them. And just
explain to you why that's bad too. Don't
we'll
worry.
We'll get to that.
Okay. Well, I think the idea, the only reason they have power is because they get to pick where it goes every year. Like that's like at the end of the day, what makes the IOC like influential And I don't know. Why would they ever give that up? Like, why would they? There's no incentive for them to take any action that's actually in the best interest of any individual country,
right,
or the people in
they
it.
They can't be shamed, so they don't care. You know, one of the people on the IOC is Henry Kissinger. And he gets paid more to show up and fall asleep in the stands than, like, the athletes who get paid nothing.
Yeah.
The whole thing is a grift, and they use the idea that it's, like, this ancient thing, you know, to pad the grift, but it's a very recent thing. It's not
like
that 130 old.
30 years old.
Yeah, and in 1904, they were doing human zoos as a part of it. So, like, maybe some of these things belong in the past. I also think we're seeing, like, as we reach the end of industrial society, what do we really need as humankind? You know, probably not the Olympics.
I mean, yeah, like, one of the things that there's always this idea brought up that, like, it is somehow supportive of peace, right? That there's some sort of international value in all these countries coming together to compete peacefully,
right,
on the sports field. And you would think the fact that the most famous Olympics occurred 4 years before the start of World War II would kind of put a lie to that.
Yeah.
Because if there was any way that was actually true, I don't know, perhaps.
And so much of it serves to rehabilitate and confuse people if you're, right, like, buddying up with dictators.
Right. I mean, if anything, the 36 Olympics did place this national spotlight on the Nazis. And what we found out was that everyone in the world was like, okay, fine.
Yeah, can't be.
We're
so
not
going
to interfere.
You're normalizing
not our problem.
Them.
Look at you how know. Good they are at marching.
And obviously, like, this has been rehabilitated through, like, Indiana Jones movies or whatever. But, you know, America took a really long time to get involved with. Mm-hmm.
It's because we didn't elect Indiana Jones president back in the
36. That's right.
Lesson learned.
So the reason that it's bad to have the games in one place and it also wouldn't work is just the IOC. It can't be the IOC. It's got to be a totally different thing. It's got to be worker-owned games. Because the question is, like, who ends up paying for it, right? If you put it in Greece, they're going to make Greece pay for it. They already completely fucked Greece during the last Olympics that they held in Greece. Greece still hasn't recovered. So Greece is actually a terrible place to put it.
I mean, I'm not saying we should keep doing it the same way we're doing it. I'm saying there's a way to pick without having an IOC. There's a way to say, okay, if we want to have international games every year,
it's,
you can,
like,
pick
anything,
a spot.
It's,
we could all pitch in, you know.
Well, I think it's like the athletes would have to own the games. And there is an example of a worker games that did happen, you know,
in Spain, right?
Yeah. I think we see with all the sports leagues, it's like the athletes are making profit off of their labor and their bodies. Who are they making this profit for? Mm. A bunch of old white guys.
Henry,
right?
Kissinger,
that's a
apparently.
Huge,
Henry Kissinger.
Yeah.
A huge and valid point. They are making these people so much money. We pitched a jokey idea on our other show last week, which would be to take Jeffrey Epstein's island and make that a permanent Olympic island. And just reclaim it, and everybody goes there. You build it up. You're not wasting anything. And just every 4 years.
I don't know. Considering that the thing they have in common is, like, a really long history of child abuse, I feel like.
I don't think it's a good idea now after talking to you. I just felt that I needed to bring it up.
I could get on board with an Olympics wherein we keep Henry Kissinger, right?
Okay.
And we hold them in Cambodia. And the whole Olympics is just him having to make it across a minefield.
Okay.
I mean, that's the Olympics.
Only, so he's the
competitor.
He is the athlete, the only athlete.
Okay, that's a good idea.
He gets a gold medal if he can make it across a minefield.
Right.
Well, if he's the
IOC.
Only one, he would get all the medals. We should have, like, hundreds of medals. So
well, the
medals
keep,
on him from, like, a
B-52.
More
exactly.
The medal is he blows up, right?
Medal
oh,
he
yeah,
blows
yeah, yeah,
up.
Yeah, yeah.
He's getting medal one way or the other, yes.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not.
Bean Dad, The Dress. 30 to 50 feral hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too.
16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus, where every week I take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who were they? What made them so notorious? Why did the internet choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? I'll be talking to internet historians, experts, and yes, the main characters themselves to get a fuller picture. Because I think that even outside individual experiences, a character of the day tells us something about how the internet worked at that time and how the attention economy developed into the freaky three-headed dragon it is today. Together, we probably won't be able to properly log out, but we can take a walk down scary internet memory lane and see one day a little more clearly. Listen to 16th Minute of Fame on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
When the Taliban banned music in Afghanistan, millions were plunged into silence. Radios were smashed, cassettes burned. You could be beaten or jailed or killed for breaking the rules. And yet, Afghans did it anyway. This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The danger they endured.
They said my head should be cut off.
The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star starting May 15th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
I would love to talk about some of the fallout that we see in host cities. You know, it's sold and packaged, as we've talked about, as, you know, something prestigious, you know, something that a host city should want, you know, bring tourism and that there's economic benefit. However, it's simply not true. The reality is that every single Olympics goes over budget and it decimates the local communities in a variety of different ways. And I think that that's worth unpacking.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, you can just see that if you look at Rio, all the recent Olympics, they've been getting like seemingly worse and worse. Tokyo right now is such a disaster. The fact that they went through with it and, you know, you see they're trying to push the same narratives they always do, which is like, you know, triumph of the will, as they say. And the sex beds, they always push like, oh, athletes are fucking crazy because they're so athletic. And it's this weird kind of feels eugenicist, like, you know, the perfect humans having the perfect Aryan sex, right? Ideal humans. And nobody cares because it's like COVID is happening. Nobody cares. It's this year would have an asterisk by it no matter what. Tons of people are dropping out for very legitimate reasons. They're having all sorts of fuck up issues with like not letting athletes that are moms like breastfeed.
I hate that. Oh my goodness.
You know, taking people off ADHD medications, which they apparently did with Simone Biles. Like just all kinds of stuff.
That
makes people realize like, oh, maybe it's actually like maybe the cost to an athlete's mental health for doing this, especially in this extremely traumatic circumstance, isn't worth it. But it's super traumatic for people in Tokyo who some of whom were displaced from housing, public housing originally for the 60s Olympics that were in Tokyo and then got displaced a second time for this Olympics games. But we just like we're just tracking at Nolympics all the fucked up stories. And there's just like 100 things every day. They made the swimmers swim in water that was contaminated with shit. And so
in this Olympics.
Yes. And so there's all these photos of like the swimmers like barfing and just like convulsing because they had to swim in this disgusting polluted bay and they just didn't call it off.
I want to interject and just say that this in general, like all of this can be extrapolated to talk to other Olympics, the environmental impact. And we can talk about that later.
They were trying to make this be like the recovery games before COVID happened. That was the idea. This is the recovery games centered around Fukushima and the nuclear disaster. Fukushima hasn't recovered at all. And people in Fukushima were like, we still have huge piles of nuclear waste. They were trying to like move them out of the way in time for the Olympics. But, you know, we see this with every Olympics. It's just a superficial, it's for television. You're turning a city into a set for television.
For American viewers. I mean, viewers are over the world, but especially in America.
Especially so across cities in Atlanta in 96 and LA in 84, what they do is they sweep homeless people out of sight. And they sweep young brown and black people out of sight. They in 1984 they started doing these gang injunctions so that they had an excuse to essentially round up any black and brown teenagers they saw and say, hey, we think you might be in a gang. We're putting you in jail temporarily while the Olympics are happening. And so, you know, when they try to make it be like, this is about like how we love Simone Biles and she's so great and we're all rooting for her. It's like, well, if you really cared about her at all, you wouldn't make her compete in these circumstances. And if you cared about any of these athletes, you wouldn't put them through this. And if you cared about the human spirit and togetherness, you wouldn't completely fuck over Japan the way that you're doing,
and sweep up the undesirables,
which is so blatantly not about celebrating athleticism or giving these athletes an opportunity to perform. It's just so blatantly not that.
And it's using sports washing to try and as a cover for all this stuff. And I think it's really not working this year. And that's interesting to see just because they have so much money. They've spent so much money on advertising and on, you know, propaganda. And when you watch the Olympics coverage, it's just propaganda. It's not even real sports coverage. It's like this person, like the human spirit is so strong. They came from nothing and now they're doing it for America.
Also, it's boring.
It's totally boring.
The only thing that's cute is like I watched it last night for like 20 minutes just to like, and so boring. The only thing that was cute was that a 17-year-old won and the live stream of her family celebrating. Yeah, it made me smile. But see, the rest of it sucks.
No,
well,
I mean,
you can appreciate when like someone who's worked hard all their life to become excellent at something succeeds and feels good. And also
but
we don't need this nightmare infrastructure built around it.
What if Captain Bringdown over here, that's me, thinks that actually like child athletes is probably just a bad idea in general
very well taken point. 100%.
Maybe that child probably started training way too early to enjoy
that's
being a human being.
Right.
I mean,
that's a broader conversation.
I mean, I feel the same
like
way about child athletes the way I feel about child actors, which is that they should not exist and they should all be replaced with Martin Short as Clifford.
Yeah.
See my friend? Wait. My friend wrote an amazing article about the making of Clifford.
Oh, that was your friend?
Yeah.
I loved that.
Rob.
That was the best thing I've ever
read.
What is it?
I keep seeing it passed around. The title is amazing.
Honestly,
I can't wait.
The only thing that could have got me into watch Boyhood is if they'd followed Martin Short around for 15 years and pretended he was a small child.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh,
so yeah, I think even when we're like
Clifford, that's such a brilliant idea.
Molly, that's such a good point, and you're completely correct. I mean, they're too young to. Same with child actors. You're too young to make informed decisions about your body.
Look, and when they're young.
I think that I might get reamed for that informed decision.
No,
you're growing. You know, you're learning. That's obviously people have encouraged you to go down this path. Anyway,
people are treating you like a mature adult who should be going, you know, training like an adult athlete. But we see that child athletes allows the Olympics to exploit them because what happens is what happened with the Larry Nassar gymnasts is they were sent to a facility in Texas and they were told their parents weren't allowed to come, you know, which is like obviously very sketchy. But when someone's like, you're doing this all, you know, you're sacrificing everything for this dream that everyone has for your child, people don't ask a lot of questions necessarily. And they don't you know, they just trust that it's their kid's going to be taken care of, and you can't trust adult men with teenage girls in a weird physical sport. It's just a totally weird construct that allows this to happen. You know, and we see it across a lot of the sports that, like, the younger athletes do get exploited and abused.
Oh yeah.
And
their safety is never, almost never.
Oh, it's not, it doesn't matter. And then they get kind of thrown in the trash when they're done, you know, like when, and a lot of them obviously, like, never go through puberty, and their bodies are affected for their whole lives because they gave their lives to Team USA. And what did Team USA give them? Nothing good.
And that's a broader issue than just the, like, you can just the Olympics. You can look into like when LeBron got scouted for the first time, and how he was like a preschooler when people started, like, looking at him as a professional athlete.
Right, and I
that's
think
the
just,
case in, like, a lot of football players too, who just kind of destroy themselves by the time they're 22.
And with with Colin Kaepernick, you know, and other black players drawing attention to the fact that, you know, black athletes are exploited and cashed in on by the leagues, and expected to not express themselves, to not have mental health issues, to just be these sort of bodies. Like, it feels very fucking racist and fucked up, you know? And I think they banned kneeling. They banned any form of BLM stuff at the Olympics. They always ban any form of political expression. There was the time in Mexico City that two black athletes did a black power salute, and at the time the IOC was fucking furious. They have since retconned it into, like, oh, we are, you know,
this beautiful moment.
It was a beautiful moment, because it was a beautiful moment, but at the time they were fucking furious, because it's not, again, it's not really about, you know, people showing up for representing the groups that they are from, you know?
Yeah.
You're supposed to just shut up and do what the IOC tells you.
Yeah, all of that.
So, yeah, we see just a real connection between the exploitation of athletes and the exploitation of cities. That's all the IOC is there to do, is exploit and extract capital from people and places.
And at a huge cost to taxpayers. You know, with very little actual job creation, at least not in the long term. Like, this isn't the big cash cow that, you know, you bring in stuff in it and it's a big economic boon to your city. It's a logistical nightmare. And, you know, like displacement of low income or unhoused people, the raising of, you know, shelving development of low-income housing and instead making way for, you know,
stadiums nobody will ever use again.
Yeah, stadiums nobody, all the things, you know, hotels sitting empty. You know, what that does, the pressure, the stress that it puts on the city infrastructure.
And the environmental damage.
And the environmental damage. That's exactly what I was getting to. I would love to talk about some of the environmental costs.
Oh, yeah. They tore down an old fish market, like a beloved old fish market in Japan, for the games. And, again, it's like, they're like, we're building all this stuff. Isn't it great? And it's like, it's always ends up being white elephants. None of it, you know, some of the people... We're more hardline, but some people are like, what if we built dorms for the athletes and then turn them into public housing? Which is like, well, unfortunately, the people that are building this stuff have no interest in it being useful.
They're here to make money, not do something for the common good.
Right. And we see so much of that in LA anyway, that there's all this development. There's buildings going up constantly, but we have a huge housing crisis and, you know, thousands and thousands of people living on the street because they can't afford housing here.
And there isn't housing. You try to move, there just isn't anything.
Yes. So one of the big Olympic partners that was just announced is Airbnb.
Great.
We also know are another, like, exploitative, extractive, like, fucked up company who don't give a fuck about the people in the cities that they are moving into. And it's all connected. It's like hotels. They're building all these hotels. One of the things they said about LA, LA had a hotel shortage. We needed more hotels.
Oh, God.
Mm-hmm. So
I'd say an affordable hotel shortage.
No, yeah. Just, how much you want to bet it doesn't drop the price of hotels?
Nope.
No, exactly. It's like, and these rooms are empty. We know they're empty. We know people are investing in them as just like, you know, investment properties and not, nobody's in them. And it's very dystopian.
It becomes a write-off for you. If you're losing money on the property, you don't.
It's already just so Blade Runner in Los Angeles. It's like we have these giant, tall, empty buildings and then people living on the street who aren't allowed to live in the empty buildings.
Yeah.
And it's all connected. The homelessness is connected to the development.
And the development is connected to the environmental impact. I mean, in Sochi, there was widespread cases of illegal landfills for the construction materials. You know, animal migration territories were used as construction sites. There was a lot of spillage of waste into waters. All of them. Same with Rio de Janeiro. Well, where is this from? The concentration of viruses and bacteria in waterways and at sea was so high that, according to a study, it would have been enough to ingest 3 teaspoons to get seriously ill. What?
Yeah, I mean, it's like it's so hot in Japan right now, too. Like summer in Japan is incredibly hot and humid. And so this idea that they always use of like people are just outside doing sports, it's, you know, with climate change, that's going to be increasingly dangerous.
It is funny to me.
Super dangerous.
They lied so shamelessly about what Tokyo summer was like. It's going to be nice and sunny.
Americans
have no
idea. And that's like they say that about LA 2028 is like, oh, well, we have all these existing venues. We'll just use them, which is like they're already putting tons of money into remodeling a lot of stuff. And they're still building tons of new shit anyway. Yeah. But I ran into our beleaguered mayor, Eric Garcetti.
Did you now?
I did. And I told him that we were going to stop the Olympics. And he was, you know, he didn't really even, wasn't really even listening to what I was talking about until halfway through. He was like, oh, you're against the Olympics.
But listen.
I said, you know, Garcetti. I said, like,
you
know,
I
was like, do you know how hot it's going to be in 2028? Like, no one's going to be able to be outside. It's going to be 100,000 degrees.
Just
no one's running the torch relay.
Wildfire smoke rolling over the fucking city.
Right?
I mean, yeah, it's getting hotter and heavier, hotter by the time we meet 2028. Beautiful. Again, I don't think anybody should even stay in LA. I'll be clearing out.
He won't. He's going to be the ambassador to India, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's clearing out already. That's why we're also kind of trying to throw some of the focus on Casey Wasserman, because he's somebody who wants to be sort of a public presence without really being a public figure, you know?
Yeah.
He's very involved in capital and development in Los Angeles and sports boosterism. And we have a ton of teams. Nobody cares about most of them. And, you know, he locked his Twitter account when it first came out that he was on the Epstein plane.
Classic.
So he sort of like wants to be this guy who's like doing all this stuff behind the scenes. And we are kind of trying to throw a spotlight on him and say, hey, you can't just do all this stuff and not expect to get blowback, you know, with your name attached to it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And he and Garcetti are the same, actually. They're both, they call themselves the 84 boys because they're both rich kids from LA who were there for the 84 torch relay, which was run by OJ Simpson.
Whatever happened to him? He seemed, he must have had a good career.
He was a great athlete, right?
Twitter darling OJ Simpson.
Let me take a quick sip of coffee and Google his name.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. All these people show up, you know, throughout LA history, just like over and over again. So like, yeah, there were people who thought the 84 games were great. They were rich people from Brentwood who
fucking Brentwood.
Got to go to the games and, you know, be little Lord Fauntleroys because their dads... Because their families were important, you know, and rich.
And then go back to their mansions on the other side of town and like, avoid the fallout.
Yeah.
Nobody else even gets to go to the Olympics. There are no, like, tickets for locals. It's all taken up with, like, the oligarchs and international rich people.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Have you seen Los Angeles people? No, thank you.
No, thank you.
Yeah, they're not going to put us on television. because we're too beautiful.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not.
Bean Dad, the dress. 30 to 50 feral hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus, where every week I take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who were they? What made them so notorious? Why did the internet choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? I'll be talking to internet historians, experts, and yes, the main characters themselves to get a fuller picture. Because I think that even outside individual experiences, a character of the day tells us something about how the internet worked at that time and how the attention economy developed into the freaky three-headed dragon it is today. Together, we probably won't be able to properly log out, but we can take a walk down scary internet memory lane and see one day a little more clearly. Listen to 16th Minute of Fame on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
When the Taliban banned music in Afghanistan, millions were plunged into silence. Radios were smashed, cassettes burned. You could be beaten or jailed or killed for breaking the rules. And yet, Afghans did it anyway. This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The danger they endured.
They said my head should be cut off.
The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star starting May 15th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
You know, I've been aware of No Olympics for a while now. And I think that the work you guys are doing in spreading awareness is really important and very well done. I'd like to talk about the changing perceptions of the Olympics and
sure.
How you've done this organizing work.
I think when the Olympics started, people were very skeptical about the Olympics. Just like, why would you want to stop them? You mm-hmm. know, you can't stop them. They're this unmovable force. And we've definitely seen people kind of come around. I think people were also like, why are you fighting this? Like, isn't there more important stuff? And we were like, well, it's part of the important stuff. And what it's really all about is like, who are these cities for? Who are our big metropolises making space for? And who do they belong to? And who does public space belong to? And who gets to decide what gets done with that public space?
Yeah.
Most people didn't even realize the Olympics were a possibility in Los Angeles, nor that they were being voted on just by city council, or even that we have them now. I think most people in LA have no idea that we're supposed to have the games in 2028.
Yeah.
They just approved another games in Brisbane, Australia, and people in Australia were fucking pissed because they did it very shadily and, you know, with no input from the actual population. And they did it while these nightmare Tokyo games are happening where nobody wants the Olympics right now. People can see that the Olympics are a wrecking ball.
It almost feels like this like malevolent alien invasion that just strikes a community.
Funny you should say that because one of the big touch points for Tokyo 2020 is Akira.
Yeah.
Which takes place at the Tokyo 2020 Olympics. It was made in the 80s, but it takes place in a dystopian world that involves the Tokyo 2020 Olympic Stadium and a giant monster alien psychic ball of energy type thing. So a lot of people in Japan were doing memes about it, yeah. about just how like Akira came true.
Except for I'm going to guess the Olympics will wind up doing a lot more damage than Akira.
Yeah, we will get way less cool motorcycles, at least.
I'd like to see a Space Jam 3 that gets into this. That the regular Monstar mm-hmm. competition they have is actually destroying the Toon World, and they have to deal with the fallout of that. I think that's
starts like bombing condo developments in mm-hmm. order to keep rent prices low.
Exactly.
I have always felt that Bugs Bunny was a comrade.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, Bugs Bunny and Uncle Ted are like this. I'm twining my fingers together. You can't see it.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is we move through this and talk about it, and you say, like, people are like, why are you focusing on this? Well, this is a cross-section of so many issues that are vitally important right now. The environment, social justice, racism, over-policing, development, and community impact. This is actually, it just represents all of the issues that we have to work on right now.
And like this sort of like unstoppable monster that's like, it's a thing that's like a tradition that we like started at a certain time, and it's gotten to the point where everyone who looks at it can look at it and go, obviously we shouldn't do that.
But here we are.
The train just can't stop.
Right, and they make it seem like the train really can't stop, you know, which is similar to what happens with gentrification, where people are like, oh, you just can't stop it. It's just going to happen. And it's like, well, if you get enough people in front of the train.
Right, if you want to stop it and you decide to, then.
Yeah.
No, I mean, they promise things to communities that are like, we're going to give you a swimming pool and we're going to give you a tennis court and, you know, that'll make up for all the gentrification. And there's this really great James Baldwin quote that I'm going to totally fuck up, just quoting it from memory. But in this piece he did in Esquire in the 60s, where he talked about how the white people expect black communities to just be happy with like, oh, we put in a swimming pool. Like now everything's fine. And he says that it's like they don't want to think about what it would actually take to invest in a black neighborhood, invest in a black community in a way that is like meaningful or makes any sense. Mm-hmm. They just want to put the swimming pools in and be like, look at all we've done for you.
And it's also this idea that you can't just invest in the black community. The investment, so to speak, in the black community, that's not really an investment, has to come as part of a bunch of rich people getting entertainment.
Right. So there's like a tennis court that Venus and Serena Williams played on that, you know, LA boosters are always using is like, look, they played on the tennis court that the 84 games like put into South LA. But again, it's like if you look at what was happening in South LA in the 80s and early 90s, like it was a nightmare for people living in South LA. It doesn't offset it. And it also like if two athletes were able to get out of that environment and become like great athletes, like, you know, well, what about everybody else who like isn't a great athlete, who you just completely fucked over, you know, militarized police and sent them to terrorize people in these black and brown neighborhoods. You know, they really and still you see with the current games, they're just like, hey, look, skateboarding. Pay no attention to anything else. Like, check it out. We've got skateboarding now. So, yeah, we say, you know, follow the money. If you want to start following the money with LA 2028, you can follow the money at Airbnb. Rick Caruso, the creep who made the Americana in the Grove and like hates people, hates real neighborhoods.
Yeah. The Americana and the Grove, to all of our listeners not in Los Angeles, are big shopping center experiences Disneyland malls.
AECOM, who developed SoFi Stadium, which is the big new kind of white elephant stadium in Inglewood that they are using to gentrify Inglewood. And the LA 84 Foundation is a big one because that's like where the profits allegedly went from LA 84. The profits in LA 84 were only made because everybody pulled out at the last second and McDonald's stepped in and like gave away some free cheeseburgers and stuff. Again, like, you know, they always say, oh, well, that one made a profit. And we say, well, for who? Who did it make a profit for?
Right.
The people it made a profit for was this thing, the 84 Foundation, which is all over Los Angeles. They took the $92 million surplus from LA 84 and put it into a private, unaccountable nonprofit that has millions invested in Blackstone and Goldman Sachs.
There it is.
And it's run by this woman, Renata Simrel.
How is that a nonprofit? Okay. Anyway, go ahead.
Dude, I mean, nonprofits are their own
yeah.
black box of corruption. But yeah, it's run by someone who is a real estate person. So, you know, again, just like, it's not about sports. It's not about togetherness. It's not about showing off a city to the world. It's about money for a bunch of rich ghouls. And that is it.
How can our listeners support you guys or get involved? I mean, what are their goals here right now? Education and...
Yeah, I mean, we have a goal, which is to stop the Olympics from coming to Los Angeles. Good. There are precedents for Olympics getting canceled.
Could you talk about that a little more? Because that's not a story I've ever heard.
Sure, yeah. I mean, a lot of bids have been canceled. Boston stopped a bid. I don't know that anyone has stopped the Olympics like that but it could happen. That's the thing. It's like, we live in unprecedented times, you know, all of these things that were invented for the beginning of like modern society. A lot of them don't serve a purpose anymore because modern society is collapsing. And I think people are aware of that. And I do think that because of COVID, people's priorities, your average person who watches the Olympics or might compete in the Olympics might have had their priorities shift to a place where giving it all up for capitalism, for someone else to make a profit with the idea of glory, isn't what anyone wants to do, either as an athlete or just like as an employee, you know, because they talk about the athletes the same way that Jeff Bezos talks about like Amazon workers.
Yep.
Like,
yeah.
They're doing it all because they love it so much. And like, they don't care that they are breaking their bodies and destroying their minds and might die on the line, because it's all for the greater good of me, Jeff Bezos. And that's what the Olympics are like. It's like, nobody's life is worth sacrificing to the Olympics.
Kissinger,
I was going to say. Yeah,
for sure.
I like your idea where Kissinger is the only athlete.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's compelling for sure.
So just 2 weeks of just kind of like hilarious torture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think it would last 2 weeks. He's an just old man, and landmines work pretty well.
But think about how long he stayed alive. He's clearly...
He's made a pact with somebody.
It's shocking.
He made a pact with the devil. Yeah. But yeah, I think
the devil's not nearly serious enough.
I agree with you, Robert. Yeah.
I think the oligarch Olympics is a great idea. Let's see those people get out and swim in the shit bay instead. Oh,
that would be fun.
You see, and that's a thing cities would fight to have. I would be fine with Los Angeles hosting that Olympics. Like, yeah, we're going to have you do, like, I don't know, a 200-meter swim in the port of Los Angeles. Jeff Bezos.
I would
be amazing.
Everybody would watch that.
Everybody would watch that.
That was going to bring everybody together.
That would bring the city together.
Well, I think the thing that really brought people together the other day was hoping Jeff Bezos would blank in space.
Yeah, I mean, all of us were disappointed by that outcome, but
that really brought the world together. Yeah, for
it did.
A moment.
It was a bonding experience.
Hope brings us together.
It was hope. Yeah. So. I think that it's all just, you know, people are seeing that the Olympics is kind of this microcosm of all the bad things that are happening to the planet because of rich people who want to just extract everything they can and then get the fuck out to Mars as soon as they can. You know, just especially the idea that they're going to bring like tons more police into Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's something most people want. And I think the people that do want it are the same people that like the Olympics.
Yeah, there's a real cross-section there.
There is a cross-section. People who like fascism also tend to like giant displays of national power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and propaganda.
Interesting how that
interesting
works.
Correlation you're making
yeah.
here.
They like everyone's favorite girl boss, Leni Riefenstahl's Triumph mm-hmm. of the Will, which
hashtag
I also
girl
think
boss Leni.
Not a good movie. Not a good movie.
No, terrible pacing.
In addition to, yeah.
Terrible pacing.
Terrible pacing, but like very fascist, just mm-hmm. like bodies, bodies, bodies with no interiority, which is what the Olympics is. And again, I think we're seeing like some of the viewers don't like it when the athletes express their interiority, when they say yeah. like, you know, my mental health is important to me, more yeah. important
how
than like.
How dare you?
Disgusting.
Take care of yourself at the, against our wishes.
Right. And then they were putting so much pressure on like Simone Biles and Naomi Osaka and people to like redeem the games and redeem it for athletes and you know.
No.
No, just let them relax, especially when you look at what they did to Simone Biles, the idea that they're sending her back into the situation where she was traumatized and being like, okay, now like win a gold medal.
It's truly horrifying.
It's fucking insane. And yeah. there are alternatives. There are other ways the world can be. And I think, again, just after the pandemic, which is still happening.
Yeah, we're not out of this for a long time.
No, they sent volunteers half vaccinated to the Olympic Games in Tokyo right now. There was this clip that went around of this Australian coach like jumping around when his person won and he like pulls his mask off and he's screaming and there's this like Japanese woman trying to get away from him.
I mean, when you it's think gross. About just, you
my
know, the,
God.
The percentage of the population that's been inoculated in Japan. Also that the fact that the majority of countries do not have access to vaccines the way we do. And are struggling with this. So they're putting their athletes at risk. They're putting their home country at risk. And they're putting the local citizens at risk.
Right. They're putting everybody at risk. And people are not happy about it. And I think we're seeing that, that they can't just roll over people. You know, and the fact that we're getting any traction on no Olympics when we have, you know, no money. And mm-hmm. they have so much money for their propaganda. And you know, we hear more and more people say, oh, you guys are right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what you were talking says, about at first, but now I get it.
It says a lot about the issue and the state, the approvals of this institution, just that that it's changing and people are realizing and you don't need a lot of money to make it clear that this isn't okay.
And the world is changing and people's and priorities are changing. And I think that athleticism... just the old systems aren't working anymore and people see that. And the IOC is just a relic of this type of colonialist grift. And that's just been made very clear right now.
Yeah.
Because they are screwing over Japan and being real dicks about it.
Right.
Being
very
racist about
and
it.
Racist, yeah.
Yeah, Thomas Bach, who's one of the head of the IOC, like referred to Japan as China the other day.
Well,
like,
you know,
he can't even remember what country he's exploiting.
Once you get further east than, I don't know, Ohio, it's all pretty much the same.
Yeah, it all
right?
Breaks together.
Like a bunch
New
of,
York, Russia, China, Japan, just, basically I mean, the same.
Have you met like your, like racist European men? They are terrifying.
Yeah, it's yes. Yes, I have.
Just racist men are.
Although I did meet a European man once at an anarchist squat in Ljubljana who believed the moon was a hologram. That's my favorite European conversation. Yeah.
Molly, thank you so much for joining us today. This was really interesting and informative. Can you tell our listeners where they can find you guys online and you
sure,
and,
yeah.
and share your
you
work?
Can find You can find NoOlympics at NoOlympicsLA.com and at NoOlympicsLA on Twitter. You can find me at Molly Lambert on Twitter. And I will have a podcast out later this year about Heidi Fleiss, the Hollywood madam.
Mm. Ooh.
So that will also involve a lot of Los Angeles-based corruption.
Very interesting. I will definitely be checking that out.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. And as always, you guys can follow us online at Worst Year Pod on Twitter and Instagram, etc. You know the score. You know what's up. Very cool.
Bye.
Everything's so dumb. Everything's so dumb, and it's gonna get dumber.
Great.
I tried.
Yes.
Daniel?
Lovely.
Worst Year Ever is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus. And every week, we take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who are they? What made them so notorious? How did the internet or the algorithm choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? Listen to 16th Minute of Fame on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned.
And like always, we'll be here every week.
You'll hear from TV writers, actors, comics creators, pop culture critics.
Nothing is off the table.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.